When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you bet fair on football, you get daily rewards, so any day can be a big deal. So whether it's a lower league match day, a top flight derby day, or a Champions League superstar showdown day, this week we're doubling our daily rewards. Get a €10 free bet when you bet €20 worth of multiples or bet builders. Double daily rewards, because we're Betfair.
Max €10 free bet per day. Each bet must have at least one selection of minimum odds of 1.5 or 1 to 2 or more. Free bet valid 24 hours on multiples or bet builders. T's and C's apply. 18 plus, visit gamblingcare.ie.
This is a Crowd podcast.
Check the mic and make sure it sound right, boys.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to 21st Century Football. It's season two. By Jove, they've done it. The Euros is on the horizon, and we are going to be waxing lyrical about every single Euros as much as we can get. And today, we are starting with Euro 2000. My name is Will Brazier. I'm joined by Statman Dave. Dave, you were how old at the time?
10 years old.
Wow.
A young lad making my way in the game.
Were your Excel spreadsheets about then? What were you doing for yourself?
I think Football Manager, the first one I played, was CM0001.
Right, nice.
And honestly, I think that was the best one I've ever played.
Yeah.
I played in central midfield with Edgar Davids and Zinedine Zidane.
Were you called Statman Dave
I was
then,
called
or?
David O'Brien, and wow. I was one of the best central midfielders in world football.
That's your real name, isn't it?
That is, yeah. The official name.
Kayfabe. Ad Brown, how are you?
I'm all right, mate. Yeah, I was slightly older. I was like 13, so I was probably also on Champ Man. Probably not quite as good a player as Dave was. But,
so is this the second Euros that you remember?
I remember 96. I was kind of got caught up in the wave of that. Yeah. But then 2000 was the first one that I could properly get my teeth into and be like, right, okay, I understand everything now. Like, you know, I understand how it all works. In 96, I just lost my head and was just cheering just randomly because everyone else was. But yeah, this one was like the first one where I took it quite seriously.
We are, of course, going back to our old friend Wikipedia, which is the font of knowledge. And Ad, I believe you're kicking us off with just some facts to set the scene.
Interestingly, the thing about Euro 2000 was it was the first time a Euros was co-hosted and held in more than one nation. So if you think back, it was Belgium and the Netherlands. And then the 16 qualifying teams, Belgium, obviously, Netherlands, you automatically qualify when you host it. Czech Republic, Norway, Sweden, Spain, Italy, Germany, France, Romania, Yugoslavia, Portugal, Denmark, England, Slovenia and Turkey as well.
Love that. Dave, where are you taking us?
A high-scoring tournament with a number of excellent matches, high-scoring games, which I imagine we'll talk about later on. Very high standard of football as well. Euro 2000 is named by many football writers as one of the greatest international tournaments ever. I think we've got a question there.
Yeah. No, people like
World Cup.
Yeah, but people like to sort of, it's almost like a bit of the hipster's choice sometimes when they look back at it and go, Euro 2000 was the tournament.
Ruben Dias, player of the year.
Guys,
we're just going to write this.
Those kind of sort of the hipster fans like that, they do seem to have a little sort of a penchant for Euro 2000 when it comes to looking at the kind of play that was played. I mean, there's some great moments, which we'll get into.
Of course. Well, speaking of great moments, they had a great mascot as well. I've got the official mascot of the tournament was Benny Lucky, and that's a pun, Dave.
Benny Lucky.
It's nice, Belgian, more Flemish.
Flemish, more guttural.
Good God. That's a pun, apparently, on Ben Lux. a lion devil hybrid with its mane having the flag colours of both host nations. The lion is the national football emblem of the Netherlands, and the devil is the emblem of Belgium.
The Red Devils.
Facts that you can.
It's not the best mascot.
No.
No, I remember the France 98 one was good, but I don't know. Do you remember?
All the. We can't really speak too much, but. Obviously, I thought all the branding around France 98 was amazing.
Yeah, really set the stall out.
Even as a seven-year-old
Will Brazier, that branding is spot on, Daddy.
I mean, some of the football played in this tournament was brilliant, but the branding, come on.
If you ever say daddy on this podcast,
that's what you're just doing an impression of you, bro. Yeah,
can we just bleep that out just in case it sounded a little daddy. Bit bad?
No. We're going to be going through the whole tournament, of course, but we've obviously got our England hat on. And we're going to start with the squad because we have to cast our mind back 21 years to have a look at this squad. And there's some fantastic names. Dave, what's the big one standing out for you? I'll start. Thanks. Great question. Nigel Martin for me. I think I wanted to be a keeper at that age and thought I had a real good chance. And I had the goalkeeper jersey.
Yeah.
A nice sort of, would you say like a mustard yellow?
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Mustard yellow?
I think the thing with this squad is, is that I think that Keegan at the time, who obviously was the England manager, if anyone doesn't know he was managing England at the time, he had that kind of, he was in a difficult situation. We had a lot of good young players that came through that ultimately we saw in the Euros following that.
Yeah.
And it was kind of that, is he going to take them or is he not? And he kind of went with the old guard, really. You know, the players that had been in the previous Euros, he started kind of a bit of a hangover from some of those players. And it was really about what's he going to do? Is he going to kind of go with the youth? There's quite a lot of names that he could have thrown in there, which maybe weren't quite ready. I know Rio Ferdinand didn't make it. Kieran Dyer was one of the players that was potentially going to quite make it into the squad. But ultimately, he went with the older players, more experienced. But I don't know if clearly it didn't work. But I just think that at the time, there was a lot of pressure on him to go with the younger players. I mean, there's some of the players that got in there. Dennis Wise.
Yeah,
I mean,
one of the main things that...
Paul Ince, Adams, in 2000, is he at the peak? One player definitely at his peak. I think probably the best player in the world at that point, David Beckham.
Yeah.
Put my hat out and say that. So, it's a good squad. It's got quality there. A lot of centre-forwards as well. Andy Cole missed out.
Yeah, no, he was injured.
With an injury.
He was injured, because I know what you're trying to do
I'm just saying.
I'm going to cut you off.
More quality there. There's a lot of forwards in there. Obviously showed Keegan's attacking style.
Yep.
But was there balance?
The balance was lacking. No left backs, I think, which you pointed out. Well, we did have one left back, which is Phil Neville, which we will come on to later.
And I think at the time, Gareth Barry, the idea was that he could fill in at left back if needs be.
An auxiliary left back.
Still seems to be that thing. I've got players that fill in.
Yeah, I know. And
you literally have a full country of people to pick.
Who would have been the best left back in the year 2000?
Maybe Graham Lasso might have been there. Might have been slightly too early for Ashley Cole, possibly. Yeah,
definitely too early for Ashley Cole.
Who was it?
It would have been Graham Lasso, I would have thought. I think he was 98, so yeah. But I mean, you look at the defenders there, Phil Neville, Gary Neville, Sol Campbell, Adams, Keown, Southgate, I actually forgot, went to Euro 2000, and then Gareth Barry, I think, was the youngest member of the squad. Obviously, we touched on the keepers, Seaman Martin, Richard Wright. Midfielders there, you've got that, you know, United contingent with Beckham and Scholes.
Nicky Barmby was absolute don on Pro Evolution.
Where's Nicky Butt in there as well?
Yeah, Nicky Butt was an interesting omission there. But then again, was he, you could argue, probably wasn't a regular for United. He wasn't starting for United. He was still a big part of the United squad at the time. But then you've got Gerrard, who was definitely in that core of those young players that were coming through, with the Rio Ferdinand and Kieran Dyer and Lampard and those kind of players. And Steve McManaman, of course, was, you know, pulling up the proverbial trees at Real Madrid at the time. You couldn't ignore Stevie Mac, could you?
Very, very, very underrated Stevie Mac.
Well, definitely. This is the year before he starred in the Man of the Match performance in the Champions League final for Real Madrid, so definitely a high-quality footballer. But I think, again, like you're looking at the classic England 4-4-2, there's a lot of players in there that work, but I just think maybe they were lacking something. Someone solid in midfield. Mate, you know, let's say Michael Carrick was a few years older.
Mm.
Other names that were missing out, I think it was due to injury, Ray Parlour, Jamie Redknapp, but Jamie Redknapp always seemed to miss out on injury.
Dave, like you said, it seemed to just lack something, that squad. I don't know what it was, a little bit of...
But then you've got prime Michael Owen here when he still had his hamstrings and his knees. Alan Shearer, obviously.
Kevin Phillips was an absolute bagsman at that point in his life, then Robbie Fowler.
And then you've got a good start in 11. I mean, the keepers is probably the best pool of talent, and that says...
I think what it lacks is
I don't know
sometimes...
what's with you and these goalkeepers. Oh, they weren't that good.
David Seaman.
We'll continue through David Seaman and his...
Nigel Martin. I mean, the Nigel Martin's so unlucky to come up in an era where David Seaman was alive. Anyway, should we get on to the group stages? Because the squad was announced and England were put into Group A. They had Portugal, Romania and Germany with them. Now, you'd probably think that the league table writes itself in that, but this is football, guys. Surprises happen. And no more surprising that we played Portugal and after 18 minutes... we were 2-0 up against one of the favourites. Paul Scholes with a header, McManaman back post for 18 minutes. I was reading an article earlier. It said, you know,
after 8 minutes, we've got a chance of winning the tournament.
Oh, it felt, honestly, it was the euphoria. I remember just thinking...
Where were you watching the game?
I was at home.
Yeah.
Mum and dad, my brother, were just... I remember at the time thinking, we're going to win this.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, I thought Keegan attacking football, I thought this is unbelievable. I'd never, like in the tournaments that I'd watched previously, there'd always been that element of that jeopardy when you're watching, you think, oh, no, something's going to go wrong, and you think about the heartbreak. And I just thought, we're playing free-flowing football here. This is unbelievable. Actually, to play the Kevin Keegan style at the time, which we'd become accustomed to in the Premier League, I was like, I can't believe it. We've managed to actually translate that kind of football into the international scene. And I was like, this is 18 minutes in. We've got to be one of the favourites. And then slowly started going a little bit wrong, didn't it?
You score three. We'll score two. Unfortunately, we will lose. Figo, is this a prime Luis Figo? Is this pre-Pighead?
Yeah, I think it's a very, very good Luis Figo, but I think Rui Costa was probably the star of the show.
He's been incredible.
And I think that's something that, when you look at the England side and set up, one position that potentially would cause them trouble in a sense is a number 10 playing between the lines. And obviously, that's, we're talking years before the holding midfielder, the Makélélé role. So definitely a problem for England dealing with players like Rui Costa, a fantastic footballer who had a very, very good tournament. But yeah, Figo, there's a lot of talent in there in that Portugal team. But I do feel with England, look, you're 2-0 up. This is why England don't win international tournaments. Like, where's your game management? Where is your, you know, ability to sit a bit deeper and play on the counter-attack? Like, there's so many examples of England teams that don't have it quite right. Yeah. And being 2-0 up in a game, you know, in a group where you've got Germany, you've got Romania.
Yeah.
I don't underestimate Romania. And I think that advantage and the quality that England had, they should have done more.
I mean, the thing is, you mentioned, like Rui Costa, a lot of people have described this as being almost the tournament of the number 10, where we start seeing that kind of transition of play, where you're getting those players in the pocket
rather than a flat 4-4.
Yeah, you just, I mean, obviously it took England quite a lot longer to catch on.
They're just coming onto it.
Yeah, exactly. We're not quite there yet, I don't think. But you know, you're starting seeing, you know, the Zidanes, Rui Costa, those kind of players that can make something happen. And in for, you know, English players, probably weren't really used to it, because obviously week in, week out playing the Premier League, you're not really getting players that have that ability.
I think you did have a few. You had Eric Cantona, Zola.
Yeah,
to name a few, but not English players in a sense. And I think that might be where you look at it, and the management as well. You know, two centre forwards throughout the entire game. Yeah, it works, but then I think defensively you need to be good.
Yeah,
well, and I think you look at the England midfield that played a lot of the tournament. It was quite an attacking midfield with what, Scholes, McManaman, Beckham, and then one player that you'd say like an Ince or a Wise. And I feel like that potentially was the downfall to this England side. Again, going back to it, the balance I don't think was quite right. Yeah. They got opened up. They really did get opened up in certain games.
I mean, Dennis Wise came in a couple of games and he was out on the left, which...
Well, 4 years later, spooky. He was managing Millwall.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It was, like you say, the balance was a little bit off. But then, obviously, after the Portugal game...
Well, I just wanted to mention, in the Portugal game, the Luis Figo absolute thunder bastard, goal. David Seaman, probably one of the greatest goalies of all time. Don't look at me like that.
I mean, I imagine, Will, you were watching going...
I was trying to grow a ponytail and a moustache at the age of 9.
I thought you were thinking...
The best goalkeeper of all time. Nigel Martin should be a word with yourself.
Is that a real moustache? Yeah. but yeah, absolute thunder bastard from him. And then I forgot, maybe it says about my brain power, but we beat Germany in a major tournament.
Yeah.
And that's just gone under the carpet. Alan Shearer.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with that was that I remember watching the game and thinking, oh my God, we've just beat Germany. But then we quickly found out that Germany were absolutely awful in that tournament.
In the German squad, there's a 39-year-old Lothar Matthäus.
Yeah.
What a player. Mehmet Scholl as well was an absolute baller in the day.
But they were going through a very similar thing. They were actually probably a couple of years ahead of what England were going through.
They redesigned their entire FA after this.
Yeah, exactly.
They redesigned everything. They redesigned their coaching strategy, player recruitment, player development. That's why Germany are number one right now. This is one of the tournaments that kicked them and they realised we aren't actually very good anymore.
Yeah.
Because they're coming from an era here where they're playing a sweeper for the majority of the 90s. Obviously, we're not allowed to talk about that, but players like Matthias Sammer in a back five having a free role, and Germany had to move on. I think this is the tournament where 1 point at the Euros wasn't good enough, and I think they identified that. Whereas, obviously, we didn't identify that and continued doing the same thing.
We got 3 points.
Yeah, we got 3 points and we got knocked out. You know, obviously Romania, we can't discredit them, but England should be beating this Romania team with the talent that England have.
Yeah.
Well, let's go into it because it comes down to the final game of the group stages. England just need to get a point against Romania. Romania side that we're accustomed to as well from the World Cup. We go 1-0 down, Chiri gets a penalty. We go 2-1 up. And then in the 89th minute after an equaliser, Phil Neville flings out a leg. I was actually down the park, and it's the first time I've ever heard like a
swear word.
No, well, I heard a cheer first and then a big cry, but Phil just dangles a leg out, doesn't he, Adam?
Well, wait, let me just analyse this. You were in the park and
I was.
You heard a cheer and then a big cry, a big...
Do you know what I was doing? I was actually wearing my England 2000 goalie shirt, just taking shots from my dad.
Yeah.
And the trees were quite far apart, so it was actually quite good training for a nine-year-old as a goalie.
That's good.
But I just couldn't watch it. But people that did watch it, you too.
I feel that, you know, he got a lot of stick after that, didn't he? He got a lot of...
Yeah, rightly so.
Yeah, but, you know, it was... I don't know. I mean...
Classic England fan revisionist.
Oh, but David Beckham got sent off in 98. Oh, Phil Neville caused all the problems.
Anti-United agenda.
The thing about it is that part of me thinks, yeah, all right, it was a rash challenge or whatever, and he stuck a leg out. But we shouldn't have been in that position anyway.
Correct.
Like you said, Dave, we should have been battering
the Romania.
We should have been absolutely... We shouldn't have been, like, trying to hang on for a 2-2 or whatever. Like, that's enough. We should have been 3-0 up. And it should... If you give a penalty away and it goes to 3-1, we still won anyway. But it was desperate. It was desperate stuff. And I think at that point, it was... A lot of people, obviously, over the years had really questioned Kevin Keegan's technical nous and ability. But at that point, I thought... Yeah, he's not that good.
Well, yeah.
Again, it's quite... Do you know what I mean? That, like, revisionist, going to the tournament, wow, we're going to win everything, yeah, we're going to score loads of goals. Then you realise you've dropped a 2-goal lead against Portugal and a 2-1 lead against Romania, and now you're out.
Exactly. And I was like, yeah,
bring in Fabio Capello, that obviously worked well, didn't it?
The German FA redesigned their whole outlook on football, and we just knocked down Wembley and then don't build St George's Park for another 10 years, do we?
That's the plan, isn't it?
Exactly.
It worked, didn't it?
Well, it might do this year. Come on, England! On to Group B now. We're going to flash through the other groups. Group B contained Italy, Turkey, Belgium and Sweden. Belgium, like we've said, were the host nation. They finished third. They lost out on the last game of the group stages, 2-0 to Turkey. They only needed a point. What's really good about those games is, especially the Dutch, which we'll get onto, and the Belgian fans as well, they like, you know, when everyone's gone in the right, they've all wore red.
Yeah.
The Dutch have all wear orange. You don't get that with England, I don't think. You know, when they're F1 for like Max Verstappen, they're all there bouncing.
Yeah,
I don't think we have that with England.
No. It's split, isn't it?
Yeah. Well,
I think England fan culture is an interesting one because it is split very much with, in a sense, of clubs that maybe down south, clubs that are up north.
Yeah.
Like, there's a big split. England is a big place. And but a lot
like,
different.
I've never understood. Like, I'm just always like proper. Because I'm a Birmingham City fan, even when English clubs are in the Champions League, which I know you two will. Because you support teams that actually win games, but I'm just like pro England teams, but I still think that seeps into a bit of like England fan culture, like you said, doesn't it?
But then I also feel that there's this weird vibe to it. Look, if you go down Old Trafford and you watch your Man United play Liverpool and you hate Steven Gerrard, you can't just turn that off.
Yeah, but
I find that obviously for yourself it's different, but for me that's how I feel.
Yeah, but I really want Jack Grealish to do well.
Yeah, but I like... So, for example, I love Jack Grealish.
Yeah, but you don't hate Jack Grealish.
But then you should hate Jack Grealish.
Yeah, I know I should hate... That's what I'm saying.
So, come on.
Well, I like Jack Grealish.
What's up with you?
No, he's a good lad. Let's get back to Group B in Euro 2000.
Can I just put a name in here? Emil and Penza. Best players on Football Manager of all... One of the best players of all time.
Can I shake your hand?
He had so many 20s. Pace, finishing.
Yeah.
Just a legend back in the day. I don't think he was that great a player, but...
Current Inter Milan manager,
Antonio Conte,
scores a bicycle kick in the group stages.
One of the goals of the tournament, I would say, Will. I'll put my hat on that.
Let's just read some names out, because I think when you go back down the nostalgia angle, Henrik Larsson, Del Piero, Hakan Şükür.
Yep.
Knocked out Belgium, of course.
Totti.
I think the interesting side with that Italian front line, you've got Del Piero, you've got Totti, you've got Inzaghi, you've got Del Vecchio. You have some top quality 90s strikers.
And that's what I think going into these tournaments, especially Euro 2000, was it was always like you were discovering new players. Maybe not from the Italians, but Ad, I don't know about you, I ain't heard of Hakan Şükür, but after it, I was looking to get it on the back of my shirt.
Absolutely. I mean, and it was that's what was so great about... You know, this tournament, you'd get, and they weren't just scoring goals, it was incredible goals they were scoring. Absolutely amazing. But just to touch on Italy again, I think this is where we saw that it was they were starting to build for something. And ultimately, obviously, they went on to win the World Cup, you know, 6 years later.
They probably had a better squad here, actually.
Do you know, it was an incredible squad. And obviously, they reached the latter stage, which we'll get to in just a little bit. But, you know, obviously, bit disappointment for one of the host nations not to make it, because usually there's extra pressure, isn't there, as well?
I mean, 2 years later in Korea, you normally do get the referees going for you, allegedly. But let's not go into that, because we probably haven't got the lawyers to cover the libel bill.
I'm nothing part of that. I'm fully behind South Korea.
Group B saw Italy and Turkey go through, like we've mentioned. And then we go on to Group C, which was Spain, Yugoslavia. We had a really good podcast debate about what took up Yugoslavia at the time. But
we had the debate about Yugoslavia. Do we want to go into this?
No, not at all.
No,
so Spain, Yugoslavia, Norway, Slovenia. Let's go through some names. Stefan Iversen of Tottenham fame.
Yeah. I'll tell you, there was someone in this tournament who you didn't realise how good he was until Savo Milosevic.
Oh, right.
He scored an absolute bag full of goals in this tournament. And we'd seen him play for Villa for a good few years before that. And he was like average.
You had a little penchant for Slovenia as well.
They had that Zahavic who ended up being, even though they didn't, you know, Slovenia didn't do great, but no one expected him to anyway. But he had some great games, and he was, I think he might have played in the German league at the time, but he was an incredible player. One of these complete mavericks who could do anything, like a magician on the ball kind of vibe. He was unbelievable. What a player.
Dave, this Spain squad, it's pre-tiki-taka as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a little bit more Route 1. We've seen some pretty long ball goals, flick-ons down. I think the winner in the Yugoslavia game from Alfonso was very much a long ball up to a big target man, a flick down and a lovely finish. But I think this was the hipsters' group of choice. I think Yugoslavia were involved in some really good games in this tournament. A lot of goals scored, a lot of goals conceded. And I think that's like, you know, kind of like that nostalgic vibe in a sense of, obviously it's no longer a country. But back in the day, Yugoslavia were very, very good. Obviously, a lot of good nations made up Yugoslavia. But I do think, look, it's a different Spain. Very much a different Yugoslavia. So it was an interesting group for sure.
Well, they get out. Spain only get out of the group with a 94th minute and a 95th minute winner.
That is potentially one of the games of the tournament. People look back on that and talk about that. And it was so exciting. End to end, like you say, two goals in 94th, 95th minute.
Imagine watching that and you score two. Like, I mean, that's almost Paul Caddis-esque against Bolton for Birmingham.
Exactly what I thought.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, I was reading a little review about that as well the other day, and they were saying that, I mean, this is unbelievable. A journalist at the time watched that game, and then he got his immediate reaction in the stadium, and he said, "I don't think I'll ever see a better game than this ever." I mean, I think that was a bold claim for him to make at the time, but it was definitely one of the standouts.
Imagine if England had done that, though, to get out of a group, two goals in stoppage time. You'd remember that even as a young stat man.
You would.
As a wee stat man.
But I think that's what England didn't have.
Oh,
cutting edge.
I'm trying to, you know, liven the mood. We got knocked out, but this is Spain pre-tiki-taka.
Well, it was a weird group that as well, because obviously Spain won the group with those late goals against Yugoslavia, but they got beat in the opening game by Norway 1-0.
Well, you're really coming up against Stefan Iversen.
Exactly. There's nothing you can do, is there?
He's an absolute battering ram. So Spain and Yugoslavia qualified for that with that late drama. Group D, which is the final group, because we've had the expansion, which I know is probably another debate for another day. So all these teams went straight into the quarterfinal. So Group D contained Denmark, Czech Republic, France and Netherlands. France coming off the back of the World Cup win. They started strong with the 3-0 win against Denmark. No, Netherlands and France had all qualified by the last game, but we saw a Birmingham legend playing the tournament as well, Christophe Dugarry, which, you know.
I thought you were going to say Bolo Zenden.
He didn't play for Birmingham.
He's not played for Birmingham.
No, we had Jesper Gronkjaer, Mario Melchior.
Definitely Zenden. Which Premier League club was he at? Was it
Middlesbrough?
Was it Middlesbrough?
Yeah, Liverpool.
Because he looked good in the tournament, actually, Bolo Zenden. Very impressive from the left-hand side.
Is he the one to watch at the time?
I think so, yeah. But I think this was the tournament of Patrick Kluivert. I think this is where he kind of fully shone. Some really, really good goals throughout the tournament. Again, we'll move on to the knockout stage in a sec. And one of the goals I've ever seen. Have you seen the Frank de Boer goal against France?
No.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, I prepared for this moment, Will. Let's get some live reaction.
No, I have seen it, but I can't remember it because I watched a video called All Goals Euro 2000.
I found myself on that. But luckily, I saved this for you, Will.
Cause I was really disappointed because doing the research, you used to get those lovely VHSs where it would be like, you know, a lovely roundup of the group stages and tournament.
Yeah, talk me through this, right?
So it's Frank de Boer.
We're rolling now. Bolo Zenden again. Stand one of the players of the tournament. Love it.
She's mine. Hold on. One to watch.
Right, ready for this.
Here we go. So, where's the final game? Oh, he's hit that. Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I've seen this. Sorry, yeah.
So, it's about 40 yards out. Free kick. Outside the box. Frank the ball. Frank, steps up. Absolutely wellies it with his left peg. Outside the boot, swerve. We talk a lot about that Roberto Carlos free kick. I'd argue that that, even better.
Well, no, the keeper gets hand to it, does, so you are incorrect.
Let's have a little look at the that squad, the Netherlands squad. Obviously, they had the home advantage as well. So they would have been one of the pre-tournament favourites. Apart from, obviously, having France in their group, who could have arguably been one of the favourites as well, going into it after the World Cup. But honestly, you look at this Netherlands squad from 2000.
Go on, hit
absolutely
me.
Absolutely ridiculous. Van der Sar, Reiziger, Jaap Stam, Frank de Boer, Bolo Zenden, Clarence Seedorf, Philip Cocu, Edgar Davids, Patrick Kluivert, Dennis Bergkamp and Mark Overmars as the 1-11. That is ridiculous.
It's balance.
Absolutely ridiculous.
You happy with that?
I'm happy with that
And
squad.
Then you've also got people like Van Bronckhorst as well. You've got Paul Bosvelt in there. You've got Ronald de Boer, Van Hooijdonk, Aaron Winter, Roy Mackay, Sander Vesterveld was one of the backup keepers. Ed De Hoy as well.
A lot of quality goal scorers in that.
It seemed to be that era of all those players actually coming together. If they're ever going to win a tournament, this was it. That on paper is ridiculous. How many players there achieved great things for the club? And they just had that thing. The Netherlands have never quite been able to get over the line.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it was. It was a psychological thing.
Mentality in them.
It was something just didn't quite click. I don't think there's actually been, for them, that was, they've never had that generation of talent come through like that.
Ooh, we've had the Johan Cruyff generation.
Well, yeah.
Right, they missed out on, was it Euro or was it World Cup?
Was it 90?
They got beat by Germany.
Yeah.
But I think that's where maybe the mentality came from in a sense of not doing it.
Yeah.
But they scored 12 goals in the tournament more than any other team. I think that was the side of it. They were, in a way, the people's favourites.
Yeah.
But home nation, score lots of goals.
It was all set up for them to win this tournament. Yeah. It was all the conditions were perfect. They've got to be their best chance ever to have won something.
But did they win the tournament? We'll be back to talk about the knockouts after this short break.
Hello. Hello there. What voice do you want me to do? We'll do a little bit. I'll just do my voice.
Do your voice.
Yeah, thanks. Hello, I'm Joe Marler. People think I hate people, but I don't. I actually love interaction with people. I love finding out what jobs they do and whether I could do what they do. The Joe Marler Show.
Joe Marler Show.
With new episodes every Wednesday.
Describe Maynooth University in 3 words.
You're in control.
Young, bold, progressive.
Skills for life.
Gives you choice.
Feel so happy!
Choose the university that puts you first.
Best decision ever.
Virtual Open Days, November 26th and 27th. Visit openday.maynoothuniversity.ie. Maynooth University. Know no bounds.
When you Betfair on football, you get daily rewards. So any day can be a big deal. So whether it's a lower league match day, a top flight derby day, or a Champions League superstar showdown day, this week we're doubling our daily rewards. Get a €10 free bet when you bet €20 worth of multiples or bet builders. Double daily rewards, because we're Betfair.
Max €10 free bet per day. Each bet must have at least one selection of minimum odds of 1.5 or 1-2 or more. Free bet valid 24 hours on multiples or bet builders. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. Visit gamblingcare.ie.
Welcome back to 21st Century Football, where we are talking about Euro 2000, and we've entered the dreaded knockout stages. England are already gone, and for the second time in tournament football, the golden goal system was applied by the first team to... What are you laughing at?
I love the concept of golden goal. It's brilliant.
Were you being sarcastic?
No, I actually quite like it. I think it's drama, isn't it? Like it's more drama than going to a penalty shootout or allowing it to play for the 120 minutes.
Well, yeah. I don't
it's
want
just
to,
ecstatic.
I don't want to put my member on the table, but I was actually speaking to Thierry Henry recently.
Thierry. How is he?
Yeah, good. He's all right, yeah. But obviously, the France were so beneficial of the golden goal rule. I think two in the World Cup. Yeah. They had one here as well. No, sorry, one in the World Cup, two here. But we were saying a modern... Because the best thing about it is if you score, it would just walk off and you've won.
Yeah, that's what I found that weird, though, in about it. Because, you know, when you...
Good weird or bad weird?
Like, bad weird. Because I feel like you set yourself up for, like, all right, we've got extra time here, potentially penalties. And, you know, and as for managers and players, you go, right, we can get back in this. We can reset after the 90. And it's like, if it goes in the first two, it's like, oh, that's it then, is it? All right, okay.
Well, it was taken out because teams were too defensive. So they got to a point where, because it had such importance on that one goal, that teams would just not attack extra time.
They just wait for pens.
So it's kind of that. I think that's why they took it out. But I like the rule. It's exciting. It's more exciting than just the 30 minutes extra time because
people do play for penalties.
You're not knocking down. So that, again, like they play for penalties anyway. So why not have this golden goal? That's a great name. What was the silver goal rule?
Well, didn't you play both halves? But if you were winning by half the end of time, the second,
if you're winning by half time, then it stops at half time. I think it was. Yeah. This is what I mean. Sometimes you think you've overthought that there.
Yeah, just I'd be happy with golden goal and a little bit of VAR.
Imagine VAR golden goal.
It's all right if you're not playing, like the Leicester Chelsea game, because you can just enjoy the sheer drama and entertainment. But if England were victims,
what do you make of it? Will golden goal?
I love it. I think it's a bit sort of like I love it. I do. It's a bit Americanized, isn't it? Like kicking a field goal in the last minute and you just walk off and you've won the game. And
so I was going to throw it more down like Parks football, like you're playing like Wembley doubles. You know what I mean? Golden goal there.
Yeah,
like,
next goal wins kind
like,
of thing.
Yeah. I think they should do something different. You know, like take a player off every minute. Or something. I think extra time.
Just kind of redesign football.
The survival cup.
We're not
going to
play 5v5 on an 11v11 pitch.
Headers or volleys. Just 30 minutes of extra time. I just find that really like stagnant and boring at the end of a match.
Yeah, no, I agree. Sometimes it isn't great
because everyone no one wants to be.
I reckon it'd be like only long shots. You've got to score from outside the box.
Yeah, or just do
one for a long time.
This is the type of reasons why they got rid of the golden goal. Long shots only. Jesus Christ.
He went to silver goal and
I want to fall out with you.
Long shots only. Gold, Gerard Beckham. Exactly. The quarterfinal saw Turkey versus Portugal. They won 2-0. Nuno Gomes,
goal.
Italy versus Romania. So England would have faced Italy. So, I mean, we probably just saved ourselves a little bit of heartache there, didn't we?
I'd say so. I think the interesting side is that poacher, Inzaghi, Gomez, grabbing the goals in really key moments. And then move on to the Netherlands.
Well, speaking of poachers, there was one in prime action and prime form. Dave, you pointed him out earlier. Patrick Kluivert, in a 6-1 win, he gets a hat-trick.
Over Yugoslavia, one of the hipsters' teams of choice. This would have been the game back in the day.
Did you have a Yugoslavia shirt?
I think I would have done. Maybe a Kluivert shirt as well. I think I liked Kluivert as a kid growing up. I think he was one of my favourite players with the likes of Gabriel Batistuta and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Nice.
But Kluivert, go back and watch his hat-trick. Lovely hat-trick. Really clean finisher. And you'd say this was probably his prime. This was when it was Patrick Kluivert was probably regarded as one of the best strikers in world football. But just to pair him with the rest of that Netherlands team, as we sort of pre-mentioned, the relationship they had with Dennis Bergkamp was very, very good. They were a good front too. And again, we're sort of talking about tens. See, Dennis is a little bit of that, isn't he? Dropping off the line playing, but very much the focal point of the entirety of their team was Patrick Kluivert. And I think we've got to remember him as a very good player. Because for some reason, he always seems to miss people's discussions when we talk about good centre-forwards.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah, I think I think...
Top scorer with 5 goals in the tournament, just to wrap that stats up.
And I think because he kind of... He declined fairly quickly as well.
He did, yeah. He had a really high peak. But I think we forget that that's what football was, in a sense, wasn't it? Like, players wouldn't stay at the top for 4 or 5 years. Now, obviously, with the way that medical science has evolved, maybe that's why we're seeing, you know, Messi for a long time, Ronaldo for a long time. Maybe we'll see Haaland and Mbappe for a long time. But it was Harry Kane for a long time.
He's English.
He's English.
Yeah, but I know what you mean.
You had Shearer as well. Obviously, Shearer was one of those players that was at this tournament that consistently scored goals. And he was there for a period, but did have seasons out with knee injuries and so forth.
Michael Owen, he'd have benefited from a bit of modern science. If he'd have been in a cryo chamber from 18,
could have been,
he'd have still been playing now.
Yeah.
That's just my thoughts.
Could have been, mate.
Milosevic popping up again.
I think, was he joint top scorer?
Yeah, with 5 goals.
Yeah, with Kluivert, which is a great return for him you're playing the Yugoslavia team. Unbelievable.
I think you can put a case, obviously, for that game being the game of the round by the sheer number of goals. But to have Spain versus France, Two European giants pitted against each other. France took the lead 1-0. Zinedine Zidane with an absolute peach of a free kick. Mendieta gets a penalty. Youri Djorkaeff scores a goal pre-Bolton before Big Sam got into him. But the thing that Wikipedia won't tell you unless you click the report button was Raul had a penalty for Spain in, I think, 89th minute.
Maybe Mendieta's got to be fuming now, hasn't he?
Well, Mendieta scored one, you're right, Dave.
You've got to remember Mendieta as well. At that time, I think he was the most expensive transfer from
going to Lazio.
Yeah, but which is, you know, you've got to be fuming, haven't you?
So I wonder what's happened there then. He's just been told to step aside, or was he off, maybe?
Let's stay for the narrative. He's been told to step aside. Raul's gone up confident. And to take it to, would have been taking it to golden goal. And he blazes
golden goal
over.
Death strike.
And France progress, which gives us a semi-final four of France, they're taking on Portugal, and Italy, Netherlands. We'll get the Italy-Netherlands game out of the way because it's 0-0. Goes all the way through extra time, through golden goal, goes to penalties. And watching it, Jaap Stam steps up to take the second penalty. Now, there's a lot of discussion about putting your striker first or fifth, you know.
But Frank de Boer was their penalty taker, and
yeah.
I'm pretty sure...
Yeah, that's fine, and he was number one, Dave.
But there was a piece specialist. But again, his penalty was poor.
Yeah.
From, I think he scored a penalty, was it against...
France, was it, in the group stages?
It was a 1-0 win over Czech Republic. A really good penalty. You know, drilled it, bottom corner, lovely stuff. But then to hit it straight down the throat, is it one of these things where they generally bottled it here?
Well, at least the ball hit the target because Jaap Stam absolutely thunderbastards the ball. I
remember that.
And it was an arena as well, and I think it's nearly hit the top of the roof. Italy obviously called calm under pressure. They get there. And then the other semi-final, absolute drama in that one. Portugal go 1-0 up. Well, I should say, sorry, about the Italy-Netherlands game. That's the host nations out as well.
One of
the pre-tournament favourites.
A lot of pressure on them there as well when they get into that penalty shootout, you can imagine. Expectation weighing on the shoulders.
What's the highest stake penalty that you've ever taken?
Probably into form football.
Oh.
Maybe would have been year 9, possibly.
Yeah.
Listen, all I'm going to say is I scored mine.
Did you?
Yeah. Cool, calm and collected. Hard low, bottom corner. Can't go wrong.
Lovely.
And they're on them small nets as well, obviously.
Fives or sevens?
Fives.
Ooh.
So you do well to actually get in the team.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because you're one of, say...
You're the elite of your...
Yeah, exactly, because he's the provisional squad's 11, maybe. It's 11, 12 in the provisional squad. To make it on the team itself is pretty good form. I scored mine. We missed two, and we lost the penalty shootout, unfortunately.
Oh, sorry.
I think the thing with penalties, I find it really interesting from a psychological perspective of you can train this thing over and over and over again and get a set rhythm and technique, but it appears that some players wouldn't have done that. So, for example, Jaap Stam. Would you see Jaap Stam on the training ground practicing penalties over and over again? Yeah, he's second choice in this thing where you'd know that the Italians would have practiced penalties many times before. And as we've seen with Italy, with Germany over the years, they just seem to have a knack in these moments that they rely on maybe their technique or they rely on their character in a sense. They're kind of calm.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, Netherlands.
Well, the thing is as well, is that even players that do practice penalties, sometimes it comes to it and they bottle it. Do you know what I mean? They think, oh, don't fancy this. You know, you have managers going around going, I need five names, I need five.
But I'd argue that his rhythm is doing it over and over again. It's repetition.
Yeah.
It's like a Johnny Wilkinson.
Yeah.
England, rugby, Australia. Same technique over and over again. All the best penalty takers have a technique they do over and over again.
Harry Kane.
Same technique. Shearer, Letizier, Bruno Fernandes in recent memory.
Seb Larson.
Cristiano Ronaldo.
Have you ever bottled it on a penalty, Will? I once stepped aside because I didn't feel confident. It was in a charity football game for a radio station and playing against the listeners and it went to a shootout. I think it was like scripted a bit though. You know what I mean? It was like, I think we were actually winning 3-2 and then it was like, oh, should we just stand on a shootout? And I'm like, no, we've won.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, we're stepping up to a shootout and winning takes off. And like, right, Adam shot a penalty. I was like, nah, I don't feel it. I'm not feeling it.
I was in... We used to... It's a bit of a shit
story. And there's nothing at stake in this game, by the way. I just
there
fancy.
Is, though, because you've got to put it...
You're playing for pride.
I just remember we used to have... do you have middle schools up here?
Middle school?
Sounds quite posh, that, Will.
No, it's not posh. It's just the way the system works down there.
Is it? What,
bloody put council.
A bit more money on education.
Middle school?
Because all our friendship group went to the same high school, but then it was split into two middle schools. So we used to have our middle school game versus each other when we were older. So I actually had a penalty for that, which I think I missed. But I just remember being so nervous for that. But for a game that didn't really matter.
Yeah.
But then you throw yourself into...
So you imagine how bloody Amsterdam's feeling. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Should we move on to France versus Portugal? Portugal take the lead. Nuno Gomes.
Who's had a great tournament, by the way.
Yeah, well, he seems to pop up all the time here. Thierry Henry gets a goal. Then it goes to extra time. Golden goal. The French love a golden goal. It's a handball on the line by Abel Xavier. Is that the correct pronunciation?
Abel Xavier.
Xavier. And he's absolutely supermanned it off the line. And they go, which I know you would go wild.
Oh, no, he went absolutely wild.
But he was just so in denial.
Yeah.
And I get that to a point, but even the penalty goes in and France walk off and they're going straight to the linesman.
Yeah. Oh, Xavier.
And he slapped it.
Yeah. I mean, but do you remember the fallout afterwards?
No.
So Xavier ended up getting a ban.
Did he? What, for his protestations?
I mean, he was like quite an iconic figure in that tournament anyway. He became a bit of a cult icon of the tournament.
He bleached his hair, didn't he?
Yeah, the mad, like, bleached blonde hair. And then he went off at the referee so bad after that. I mean, it was clearly obvious what he did. So I was thinking, when you watch it, you think, I don't know what you... Like, you just watch it back, mate. Yeah. Like, see, but he went, so he got a 9-month ban.
9 months?
Yeah, and then it got reduced to 6.
Bloody
but hell. Yeah, he got a 6-month ban just for his conduct against the referee. He did take it a bit too far, to be fair to him. But this is before, I think he signed for... I don't know if he played for Everton at the time or he signed for Everton just afterwards. But yeah, he went absolutely wild. Worth watching back, by the way, because it is pretty funny.
Which is, you know, we've all given away a handball, but, you know, just accept your fate, Dave.
Absolutely not. Berate the officials.
You're a bit of a shit outside.
Absolutely.
I mean, also, you'd want to, like, spare your blushes, wouldn't you? Do you know what I mean? If I'd done that in interform, I'd be protesting to the PE teacher.
Yeah, but you could get away with it because there's not, like, 45 cameras there picking up your actions.
That's true, actually. Yeah.
He's on the world stage.
Yeah, he got a 9-month ban, I'd have just got detention.
Yeah. Then we move on to the final, which is France versus Italy. Where were we all watching this one? Can we remember? I don't want to throw you under the bus, but you were a little bit older. Were you still?
I was at home, mate. I was only 13. I was out having a couple of beers, wasn't it, mate? I imagine you were probably training in the park again.
I had the Nigel Martin 13 jersey on.
I love how you were in the park when the games were on.
I
just watched it at home, mate, and I remember I couldn't call it. I did fancy France, especially after that Portugal game. I remember thinking they had that extra little something where you just felt they could dig a little bit deeper when it came to it. But yeah, I mean, great, great, great final, I think that.
So Italy go one up. Del Vecchio, which is an absolute name that just runs through me and gives me that nostalgia, Dave.
Del Vecchio.
And then it comes down to the 93rd minute. I don't want to drop the old name again, but speaking to Thierry Henry recently about it.
Oh, is he?
He's fine, yeah. Says hello. He actually said, because, you know, we were given all the superlatives about Toldo. He said Will Tord pops up in the 93rd minute, and if you watch the goal, there's no right for him to score because all Toldo has to do is literally just stand up, hits him, either blocks it with his feet. But for some reason, bit of magic in the air, Will Tord's shot goes underneath him, and in the 93rd minute, they equalise to take it to extra time and golden goal.
He had a habit of doing that, Will Tord. He was just a kind
Old
of
Trafford?
A, yeah, he's just one of them players who could just pop up and get you a goal just out of nothing. He was, I think he was a little bit underrated in some ways, Will Tord. He was a great player to bring off the bench, wasn't he, as well? And just good pace, direct, like had a great eye for goal.
Bit of composure.
Yeah, just a good, solid all-round player. And, you know, he's pretty decent for Arsenal, to be fair. So, yeah, that takes it straight, you know, 93rd minute. I mean, at that point, you think to yourself, Italy, how close were Italy to winning that tournament when you think about it?
93rd, it must be absolute heart and
it's
mouth.
It's seconds. Oh. Seconds away from winning it.
And then we go to the golden goal, where David Trezeguet immortalises his name in French history with a finish. You can replicate volleys with a bit of luck. You can replicate long shots. But the technique on this, the ball's behind him, and the power he generates to get it into the top corner, Dave, is something that you'd be very proud of.
You would be pretty proud of that. But I think the game was an interesting one in terms of nullifying Zinedine Zidane. Player of the tournament, in my opinion. You know, had a great Euro 2000. But at that point, obviously, he'd played for Juve for a long time. A lot of those players in that Italy team, in that squad, the likes of Conte, you know, they know what Zinedine Zidane's about. And it's one of the finals where they kind of nullified him in a sense. And, you know, one of the first real good defensive jobs on Zinedine Zidane, which could have built up what people do in the future with him, is dealing with him like Italy did. And I think that's a part of the Italian culture and nature in football, that they do nullify threats. Yeah. They are a defensively minded side overall. they had the wonderful goal scorers at this tournament, as we pre-mentioned, but it was a defensive team that got to the final because of their defence, not their attack. And obviously it came down to the squad, the will towards the Trezeguets. They hadn't started. Obviously Omri, Zidane and Djorkaeff were the main kind of attackers in attacking midfielders, in a sense. And I think that's a line where you look at France and you look at the depth, and that's probably the reason why they won this. The depth in their squad was probably the best at the tournament.
And that's what it comes down to as well. Because, I mean, let's throw back to the group stages. I mean, they're bringing on Wiltord and Trezeguet, and we're bringing on Dennis Wisehead.
Right, this speaks volumes, mate. I couldn't put it better myself. But you look at... it's a brutal way to lose a tournament as well.
It's just that walk-off football, yeah, isn't it?
I just think something about the walk-off is even more devastating than... Like, if you go to the full, you know, play the full 120 minutes... And you think, all right, well, we're chasing the game till the very last minute, and you're almost still in it, aren't you, till the very end? Even mm-hmm. if you're one goal down and it's, you know, you're playing to the very end of extra time, but to go bang, there you go, we're done. I just think it's absolutely brutal. Okay. I mean, it's great if you know as a neutral watching it, because like Dave said, it makes it super exciting, and it was a brilliant way to end a tournament. Can you imagine if we'd have lost that tournament in that manner?
Just talking to the last little stats on that depth. You're looking at Sylvain Wiltord. Played 3 hours at the tournament, two goals and an assist, a goal involvement every 60 minutes. Again, off the bench. Same as David Trezeguet, didn't start a single game in the knockout stages, but they made the most of, obviously, his cameo appearance in the final. You know, being involved in that first goal.
Yeah.
And then scoring the second.
It's what we call in the business the Eder mentality, where you come off...
The Eder mentality.
Yeah.
Even though Sylvain Wiltord and Trezeguet did it before Eder, but Eder's the guy.
Yeah, but I think Eder, you go... He's played for Swansea and he's just won the Euros for Portugal, which we will come on to. Gents, Euro 2000. I'm really not trying to bring up that you were older at the time, but where? Sorry. But where do you rank this in terms of your favourite Euros? Take England out of it.
Yeah, that's the only problem.
Leave England.
Right. If England would have got further, it would have been right up there for me. In terms of enjoying the games, though, I think there was some absolutely brilliant football played, some fantastic games. It was just England sort of bowed out with a whimper, didn't they? That's the only problem. I'm going to say it's up there, though, in terms of like sheer entertainment. I enjoyed the tournament. I loved it. Just really, really wish England would at least just get out of the group stages to make it a little bit better.
Love that. Who was your player of the tournament, Dave?
Yeah, it was Zinedine Zidane.
Yeah.
As much as they dealt with him in the final, looking at the stats for him, most passes in the final third completed, most dribbles completed, carried the ball nearly a kilometre.
Wow.
At his feet. So progressive distance, insane. I think... That's why Italy had to have a plan for him in the final, that he'd gone through the rest of the tournament, scored some massive clutch goals. You talk about the free kick against Spain, big, big goal there. The golden goal in the semi-final, the penalty, takes a lot to step up from the spot and have that composure. So you've definitely got to give it to Zinedine Zidane. I think shout-outs to Patrick Kluivert as well. We've given him a lot of praise. Nuno Gomez. I think it was the kind of number 10 poachers. I kind of agree with that. Number 10 poachers was a big part of it. Rui Costa, obviously, for Portugal, stood up. And it could have been David Beckham's tournament. It really could have been. Three assists in three games.
Yeah. I mean,
but
that,
England
that first
let
game,
him down.
He started... The first two goals that England scored, bang, straight in.
Great balls from David Beckham. Yeah. So just to reiterate, England let David Beckham down in that tournament.
I want to say player of the tournament for me. Obviously, Zidane would be right up there, but I'm going to say Patrick Kluivert, just because I think it's the time where, as Dave said before, we saw him. All this, he'd been spoken about since, you know, he scored that goal in the European Cup when he was like 17, 18 or something, didn't he?
95.
Yeah, and it was
Champions
like,
League yeah, and, win, and, Ajax.
And you felt
Louis
like
Van Gaal.
For all those years, it was like, right, Kluivert, he's going to... And he was always scoring goals, but you felt like he'd properly done it on the international stage at this point. And for him to get the Golden Boot home tournament, all right, he shared it with the Aston Villa legend, Savo Milosevic, but it was also great in that tournament. I'm going to say Kluivert for me. What do you reckon, Will?
I'm going to go Zidane, and Dave's already... more articulately laid out why he was the player of the tournament. But what are we saying for match of the tournament? I'm thinking it's a toss-up between that Spain and France quarter-final or the France and Portugal semi-final, just for the sheer amount.
Whoa, hold on. You're ignoring the 4-3 classic between Spain and Yugoslavia.
No, I think that's good. Joking aside.
I'd say that game or the Netherlands 6-1. I think Yugoslavia have got to be there. They've got to be, it's either one. Will, you can pick
I'll give you the Spain game or the Netherlands game.
I'll
give you the 4-3 because, like we said, if we put ourselves in some Spanish shoes and England scored two goals in stoppage time to see us win a game and qualify out the group stages, the amount of beer
drama
that would be spilled, guys. not in my pint glass.
No, I reckon that 4-3, definitely.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That is scenes. That's unprecedented scenes. Right, gents. Right, gents, and finally, we look at iconic moment as well. Ad, where are we going?
Well, I don't want to go to the obvious of David Trezeguet, you know, doing golden goals, the obvious one. I'm going to say Abel Xavier, kind of
slapping it off the line.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a pivotal moment in itself, in the sense that France go on to ultimately win that game, then go and win the tournament. But yeah, to see Abel Xavier, who, as I said before, became such a standout figure for that. It was a great Portugal team, by the way. And for him to, he just went off.
I wonder if his mind tricked him that he didn't actually handball it. So for like that half an hour, he generally thought he was in the right.
For him to protest that much and to get himself a 9-month ban, he must have really believed that he'd done nothing wrong. But it's just those moments like that, I think, that you got to look back on with a little bit of fondness in a way. And it's just the complete craziness of football.
I think it's just the Sylvain Wiltord goal. I think that's the only thing that actually sticks my mind from the entire tournament. Being a young lad knocking around the streets of Manchester back in the day. But still, just remember that Sylvain Wiltord goal. So, so big as well. Massive moment in a final. What more could you want?
Can we just give a quick shout out to Yapstam as well?
Yeah, Yapstam. And his penalty.
Because I remember that for a while, a lot of my mates are United fans, there was a lot of banter around that.
Imagine afterwards, if Twitter
going,
was about then.
The ball's not landed, yeah.
I've got it in my back garden.
Yeah, yeah. It was all that came for it. There was all those little jokes being made at the time.
Hot words, hot takes. This has been 21st Century Football. Next, we are looking at Euro 2004, so make sure you stick around for that. We've got lots to chat about. We're getting all nostalgic as we build up for the Euro. Statman Dave, have you enjoyed yourself?
I have. I saw a lot of goals that I've never seen before. That Frank de Boer goal, what a goal.
Love it. Ad, have you enjoyed yourself?
I loved it, and also I like the fact you've managed to hammer home just how old I am. Sorry, I appreciate mate, that, yeah. Will.
And such is age and time, it's only going to get worse as we go deep into the tournament.
Are we going to have to get
I was about 40 in your 2004.
Right, we'll see you next time for Euro 2004. See you, bye!
It sound right, boy.
Crowd Network. A place where you belong.
This season, Live Score is the only place where you can watch every single UEFA Champions League game for free. That means more goals, more unforgettable drama, more end-to-end action. And whether you're watching on your phone or tablet or casting to your TV, the free LiveScore app gives you even more ways to watch. LiveScore, the new home of the UEFA Champions League. It's more than a score. Download now on the App Store or Google Play.
Sports Social Podcast Network.